Welcome, Metal Faithful, to somewhere, to a spot I've never been before. You know, I've been doing this podcast for almost a year, and I've never got to be in the host chair. So, yes, I am in the host chair, and who is I? I am the writer of the original Metal Hammer of Doom, as Mark Radlich calls me, podcaster extraordinaire, rolling jackass, Mr. Fun Time himself, and your metal missionary, Mr. Robert Cooper. That's right. Mark is on a bit of a sand vacation, as well as he should be as a very hardworking man. So I have volunteered to take the reins of this podcast and make it my bitch. That's right. I'm making this podcast my bitch. So, yes, what are we talking about tonight? I'm sure if you can't read the title, it's death. The band. One of my favorite bands, because starting this solo run, I was wondering what should I cover, because I have had really nobody to kind of cover for me for co-host for this week. I have one in 2 weeks, but I do not have one. I do not have one this week. So I was like, what should I cover? Originally, I was going to do the new album by Witherscape, which features Dan Swanio on vocals, and Dan Swanio is fucking amazing. But then I was thinking, you know what? That album's already a few months old. I think I want to do something that Mark would never agree to, at least in a sane mind. So I went ahead and thought, I'm going to do death, because Mark doesn't give a fuck about death. I am very sure of this. And me, I do give a fuck about death. I give many fucks about death. So that's what I'm doing. I am doing a death retrospective, and there's going to be a little bonus coverage at the end of it. So yeah, if anybody wants to call in, the number is 323-657-0901. You just call in. You want to talk death with me? That'd be great. I would love somebody to talk to, because while I love to talk, I like talking to other people even more. Well, at least I like to think so. But yeah, the reason I picked death is honestly, honest to goodness, they are my favorite band, bar none. No other band holds up to death, in my opinion. It's really kind of funny, because out of all my favorite bands, really, Death are one of the newer entries, because you have other bands like Megadeth, which I've been listening to since I started listening to metal, and Opeth, which I became a fan of very fast. But they're about middle of the road. They're the third, I think, out of my top five, they're really the third one that I came to love. And it's funny, because the first time I ever heard Death was on Dave Mustaine's Megadeth radio that he used to have on iHeartRadio. I used to just go over to my dad's house and blast that. What seems like hours on it. Because it was very interesting, because it played a lot of thrash and stuff, but it also played stuff like Lynyrd Skynyrd, Zeppelin, Elton John, and then it played Children of Bodom. Then it played Death, and it played, first song I ever heard by them was Crystal Mountain. And I was just, whoa, because, you know, the symbolic art cover is just nuts. Like, all this big eye in the middle of it, and all this stuff going on. You don't really, it's almost a little disorienting, but it's just so, so wonderful of an album cover. And the song itself was just awesome, especially, I think what won me over was at the end, that guitar solo. That just goes along with, had that nice, kind of a Arabic, almost an Arabic feel to it. But I really loved them. Yeah, I fell in love with them at first listen, and I just really ran with it, because I went from there, and then I heard Spirit Crusher, which is my favorite song by them. Love it. Heard Spirit Crusher, and then I downloaded some other songs. Like, I downloaded like 3 songs at a time, and then I started listening to whole albums. Honestly, I never heard their original stuff, the more gore-oriented, as they say, the more straight death metal. The first 3 albums, Scream Bloody Gore, Leprosy, and Spiritual Healing. I never really heard much of those. And while I do love those albums, I think the later 4, the more progressive and technical ones, are the ones I kind of, I like them, love them a little more, because they were the ones that I heard first. And I really fell in love with them. So yeah, the band quickly came to be one of my favorites. And Chuck Schuldiner, man, especially when he's just read about the guy. He was a really awesome dude. Like, he just seemed like a really nice guy who just kind of wanted to love everybody and play some awesome music. And he did a very good job of that. is, like I said, this band really, it's made quite a bit of an impact on life, I'd say. Yeah, definitely. Because like I said, I have bands like Megadeth, which, you know, I will forever love and just cherish. But this band right here, maybe it's just the fact that I came in so late on them is why I love them so much. Like, not to say that, you know, just in general, they're not a great band, because they are one of the best. Like, it's, every song is great and well-crafted, and there seems to be something in there. There's always something in there that I can hold on to and say, this is why this is a great song, and this is why it deserves to be in this catalog. I don't think they have any songs where I can – they don't have anything. Like, Megadeth has Risk, where there are songs where I'm just like, that's not what I want. No, they always have that. And I love them to death. So, yeah, Death itself, like I said, great band. And I guess to start the retrospective, I guess I should probably talk about what their early history, you know, like what came to being of Death, because originally they weren't Death. Believe it or not, they were under the name Mantis, which I'm sure is very uncommon knowledge now, considering Relapse released the Mantis demos on disc, on a CD, I think it was last year. Yeah, it had a lot of rarities and demos, and Jesus, if there was one guy that had demos upon demos for his band, it was Chuck. He had at least, like, even on Metal Archives, you look, and it's got, like, at least 10 different demos listed. And while most of them are the same song, it was a really cool album to look at, because you got to kind of get your shovel and start digging in and finding, like, some old demos and some songs that you never heard on actual Death CDs, like Witch of Hell and Reign of Terror, stuff like that. They weren't on Scream Bloody Gore or any of the other ones. They were never released until then. So it's really kind of neat. It was really neat to hear those. And for the first time, but yeah, they started as Mantis in Orlando, Florida, which is fun because, you know, Florida death metal. It's really funny. They started everything, honestly, in Florida in 1983, no less, which, when you think about it, all the other genres, like, really were just getting started. Like, yeah, thrash had some stuff going on with Metallica and Anthrax, and of course Slayer, because Megadeth weren't around until 85. But, you know, they're honestly neck and neck with thrash in terms of, I guess, coming out with music and things like that. But yeah, they started out in Orlando. They are the originators of the Florida metal scene, obviously. And I think they can really be looked at a lot with Possessed, who are from California. But the two of them really were kind of the two bands, well, along with Celtic Frost, if you want to throw them in there, like two or three bands that really define the sound of death metal. And in my opinion, death is death metal. But a lot of people say Possessed also holds the title of that, which I can understand, because they're a death metal EP. I'm sure not EP, it was an LP. I'm trying to think, it came out in 84, 85, and it'll blow your socks off. It is amazing. And honestly, like, that album, as well as Celtic Frost, is the reason why Death sounds like they did. Because Chuck was originally playing something wasn't quite as death oriented. It was more Celtic Frost than it was Possessed. But as soon as Possessed showed up, it was definitely it switched to being more like Possessed. But yeah, he started out with Cam Lee, who you'll know from Massacre. You might know from Massacre, and Rick Ross, who you will know from Massacre because he still runs Massacre, as well as M. Inc. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he's a pretty cool dude. He's on Facebook. So yeah, the three of them got together and they did some tapes and stuff like that. And stuff like the Death by Metal demo really got them. It just got along everywhere. Like, I'm pretty sure in the tape trading days, that was the ones that you needed to have. Like, I'm really sad that I missed out on the tape trading days, really. Because it seems like something really, really cool. Like, I know now when I find something on YouTube, I get really excited. I'm like, oh, this is so neat. But I can only imagine how different it would be then. Just, you know, looking at something and being like, oh, wow, I've never heard of this. That looks cool. I should listen to it. We don't really – it's something that we don't have now, because – now it just comes to you instantly. You can hear whatever you want to hear in 30 seconds, make a judgment, and either, you know, go buy the album, go illegally download the album, or just not listen to it at all. I think there's something really cool about seeing a cassette and then buying it, and then that anticipation will be, oh, this is really cool. And then again, you also will get some really shitty albums, I'm very sure. Everybody listening, all five of you, we have had some shitty albums that we've bought. Even I, before I got a hold of the internet, I got some real turds. A few Disturbed albums. Yeah. I used to like Disturbed. Don't kill me. Don't kill me, bro. But yeah. Yeah, Mantis, they got stuff around, and then they just kind of dropped off, or not really dropped off, they just dropped the name and became Death, which according to Tim Amar, who was the vocalist for their band Control Denied, more on them later, he is saying that maybe he named the band Death because he was taking the experience of his brother, Chuck's brother Frank, he was taking Frank's death and turning it maybe into something positive, which, you know, I think that's a very poetic way of putting it. What I've heard of from Chuck was that he just wanted to give a good description for what the music sounded like. It sounded like death, and at the time, I can only imagine what that sounded like to people who have never heard it before. Because, you know, you've got Slayer. Slayer is pretty much like the epitome of what of the mainstream of metal, at least at the time. Like, I'm not saying they were mainstream at all, but when you look at what the other people were, you know, your European band, now you're more likely to hear Slayer than you will the European band. But yeah, they were usually the heaviest you could find, and Death are even heavier than them, if I must say. But yeah, they released the Reign of Terror demo after they became Death, and then, of course, like, the Infernal Death tape was cool. Like, I remember I heard that actually on I found a download before the Mantis stuff was released, so technically it wasn't illegal because it's hard to find. That's right, I am justifying it. Yeah. I found a big 1 gig download of every demo that had been floating around the internet that had just been put into one giant bundle. And I heard some stuff on the Infernal Death demo, and I was like, wow, this is really neat, especially knowing the songs from Scream Bloody Gore that, like, I do. Some of those songs were really neat. And yeah, so that was cool. That was really cool. It was released in 85, and Rick Ross left afterwards, which is kind of, yeah. I was kind of surprised when reading that, because I thought he was in the band longer once, but he wasn't. And then Cam Lee got booted in the band sooner or later, which stinks, but, you know, it happens. Then Chuck decided to go to the Bay Area of San Francisco and played with DRI drummer Eric Brecht and didn't like that. So he went back to Florida, which kind of stinks, but oh well. So yeah, after that, he went to go play with the Canadian thrash band Slaughter in Canada. And he recorded a song I think I've heard on too. But otherwise, yeah, he didn't work out very much. He went to Florida and then just kind of jumped around from San Francisco to Florida, where he met Chris Reifert, who will soon be in Autopsy. But, you know, 17, Chris Reifert was playing the shit already on drums. And they recorded the Mutilation demo, which gave them a deal for Combat Records, which I'd say they're a pretty decent size label, especially when you consider they were working with Megadeth at the time. So Megadeth did some pretty good stuff. And then we got Scream Bloody Gore. Now, right here, I would be playing a song from Scream Bloody Gore. Blog Talk Radio is being a son of a bitch and is not processing my audio. So when that gets to working, I will play everything that I haven't been able to get through audio problems. And I really hope this works before the end of the podcast, because if it doesn't, you are going to want to massacre me. No pun intended. You're going to want to massacre me with a hatchet, because over an hour of me talking is probably a death sentence for most people's minds, just because I don't shut up. But yeah, Scream Bloody Gore came out, and in my eyes, it is death metal. Like, no album before it, or really after it, can really claim that it was death metal. Like, it is the place for death metal. It is the one album I can find and go, this is death metal, and you can't argue with me. Because it is pretty much every band after that is emulating this album. This is the Black Sabbath of death metal, Scream Bloody Gore. And it is a wonderful album. I must say so. It is a lot of people's favorite, which it is not my favorite, but as I said earlier, probably because I didn't hear it as much at the time, like, you know, when I was getting into death, like, if I would have heard this first, one, I'm not quite sure if I would have liked it, because at the moment I first heard death, I was really more into thrash and some of the more metalcore stuff, sad to say, just being honest here. At the time, like, I started with metalcore, which, you know, I take that as kind of pride, because that means I've really come a long way. Like, not diss metalcore too much, because it's not an awful genre. It's just a very, there's a lot of it that's really not what I like in music. A lot of it is really manufactured and repetitive. And unlike some of the more death metal-y stuff that tends to repeat itself a while, metalcore just doesn't. It doesn't do itself any favors with the more pop-oriented sound that it has. But oh well, it's I started with metalcore, sad as that is to say. But yeah, if I would have heard this album first, I'm not quite sure I would have fell in love with death as fast, because the more progressive and technical aspects of the later albums, I think, really helps bring in new listeners, because sometimes straight death metal can really scare people off. Like, I know for a fact I've had some friends who didn't like screaming and growling, but if I threw them on something like an Opeth, or even now like Woodsy View Pre, who are more of a blackened sound, if you give them some of their stuff where they don't scream, and then, or at least there's something else with the screaming, and you kind of push the screaming in slowly, it's not too bad. They tend to like it more, and then they come to love death metal, and that's what happened with me. I heard some stuff like this, and oddly enough, like Cannibal Corpse, but for the most part, I actually hated Cannibal Corpse at first, but, you know, some of the stuff, like, that is one thing I will give metalcore, just on a slight tangent. Metalcore is good to start people off, because it has kind of that kind of softer, poppier sound that makes it accessible, especially when you get a band like Trivium, or my favorite, Killswitch Engage, but honestly, they are pretty much like metalcore incarnate. But if you get a band that throws in some more thrashier stuff like Trivium, the solos, it can slowly get you into metal, and you can start warming up to the growls and stuff like Death had. But back on topic, Scream Bloody Gore was, like I said, at the time, was just amazing and insane, and it was just, whoa. Like, you know, I wasn't around then. As most listeners for this show know, I was not born until 1991, so I am talking about a lot of stuff that I have missed out on. But I know for at the time of 1987, there was nothing really that sounded like Scream Bloody Gore. And it shows, because, as I said, this is the template for death metal. And as I said, I stand by that. There are like so many great songs. Zombie Ritual, which is the one I was going to play, is the most unique on the album for my money, because it had like kind of that almost like an Egyptian sounding guitar at the beginning, and it kind of broke up what was a very fast, heavy, and just brutal start to a great album. It's still a great album. I'm not complaining the fact that a lot of the album was, you know, very fast and heavy, and had great solos and just screaming and wailing away. The Zombie Ritual was like one of the best songs of the album, and it doesn't quite tell a story, but it talks about this zombie ritual a lot, and stuff talks about zombies. But that's fine. I love zombies, and I love the sounds of the song. There's other songs like Evil Dead is awesome. It's just fun to go Evil Dead. You just do that over and over, especially when you're driving, because nothing says brutal like a Food Lion parking lot. Food Lion's a grocery store for all you people who don't know what a Food Lion is. All the old people in the parking lot appreciate it. I can't blame them for appreciating it, because it's just so great. But yeah, the album itself was just great. You can honestly see flashes of what Death would later be, which was more of a progressive metal band, especially after everybody leaves and the band is pretty much dismounted. I don't know. Disassembled. That's the word I'm looking for. The band is disassembled and brought back So yeah, you see little shades of what would later be the progressive death, which is the 90s death. It's cool that the band can really, like, even though it did suck that the band split up for like a year or so, that you can look at a band and say, this is this era and this is that era. And then you can look at like the two albums, like right before one ended and right after the other began, where you can see the shift. But yeah, Scream Bloody Gore was great. Great album. I love it. I recommend it to anybody who's really trying to get into metal. And oh no. Come on, Blog Talk. All right. Blog Talk Radio has come in for me and says it loves me very much. So here you go. Here is a song from the album I'm hyping up so damn much. Here is the Zombie Ritual off of Scream Bloody Gore. Yeah, there that was. Like I said, it's more of a representation of what was the outlier for the album. That one had started out differently than the rest of them, which, as you heard after the intro, is really what a lot of the album sounded like, that really driving beat, heaviness. But it was really good, and it was just so great, especially for the time. Like, even now, it does what a lot of death metal albums struggle to do, which is stay consistent with their set, manage to pull off one sound and keep it interesting for most of the album, which I know a lot of people complain about for death metal, which is what I hear a lot. Like, you know, when I'm writing my column, some people just tell me, like, you know, I like a lot of genres, but death metal is not my thing. It's kind of repetitive. And I'm like, I can understand why you say that. But if I brought them an album like Scream Bloody Gore, maybe they would think differently. But yeah, pretty much the themes for this album were just, it's gore, which is just the way it's a horror movie, which is, I think what Chuck always says is that really spoke to their immaturity at the time, which you'll see as he grows as a musician, how his lyrical themes really change. But this was really all about like horror movies and blood and gore and zombies, monsters, and it's a really fun listen, and I recommend it, definitely. So, all right, so Scream Bloody Gore, that's over. And Childers moved back to Florida because Reifert wanted to remain in California and go do Autopsy, which their new album is amazing. We listened to it. It is awesome. And this year is great for death metal. So just say a band has had just an amazing album. It's really saying something. So go after this podcast, go listen to it. I promise you, you will not be sorry. But yeah, so Chuck went to California, right? And he formed a band pretty much with Massacre. You'll be seeing this later where he takes a whole band and is like, let's make an album. So more or less, this was Rick Ross. He got back with Rick Ross and took Terry Butler and Bill Andrews, those drummer and bassist, those two were in Massacre with Rick, and they went to create Leprosy, which is another album that honestly I think I like more than I'd say I like it more than Scream Bloody Gore, which isn't saying much. Like, if I ranked my death albums, which anybody wants me to, well, I might do anyways at the end of it, but ranking death albums is hard. It is like trying to rank your children. Not that I have children, it'd be more like me ranking my cats, but still. would be kind of hard for me to do because I love them all so much, and they all have so many great things. And honestly, it just depends on the day as to where I put the album. But yes, Leprosy was pretty awesome. I dug it. It talked more lyrically. It left the gore themes a little more to the side. Like you'll still have some songs like that, like Leprosy, which talks about leprosy. And that's a pretty horrifying thing when you think about it. Not that I've seen many people with leprosy. I live in North Carolina, and we don't have many lepers here. But yeah, it was a very solid album. I loved it quite a bit. And it's got a lot of really good songs on it. Like my second favorite song, which I'll be playing in a few, Pull the Plug. It is one of my favorite songs that I've not heard live, but heard on a live album, because the way they treat it, they give it this really nice intro. And the song just has a really great beat to it and tells the story of like a guy that's pretty much going to die, but they keep him on life support. And he's like, why don't you pull the plug? Just, you know, end it. Which is, I feel like it says a lot to put yourself in such a mindset. Like, if I were on like life support and they kept me on there, I could understand why they would do that. But really, just like the song itself tells the story of like a man. He's just like, you know, just pull the plug and let me go, because it's just so painful and everything. I'm like, you know, Chuck, good on you. I can understand these local themes. And it does show maturity instead of just pure gore. They go to more themes of, you know, of life and of more life and death stuff. Which is also songs like Left to Die and just awesome stuff. So I guess to wrap up talk of Leprosy, I know I didn't talk about as much as Scream Bloody Gore, but really the album itself, it'll pretty much speak for itself, and there wasn't any like internal strife like there will be for next album, which will be very interesting. But here is here's the song Pull the Plug off of Death's Leprosy album. Love it. Enjoy it. Yeah, there was Pull the Plug. And I think when you compare this album to the last album, this one shows that they slowed down a bit more and gave the songs more time to breathe and to have their own structure rather than more fast and furious pace, which you'll find, like I said, what you find with a lot of thrash and death metal, which is, like I said, it is fine. Scream Bloody Gore is awesome. But sometimes when you slow things down, it really lets the music speak for themselves and just breathe. And like I said, that song there does such a great job of telling a really good story. And for death metal, you can understand Chuck pretty damn well. I got to give him that. That is impressive. But yes, from Leprosy, we go to Spiritual Healing, which is where we get to some interesting stuff. Like, and Rick Ross got fired from the band, believe it or not. Apparently, he was doing a really quick and ill-planned tour of Europe. And no, they did not like that. I'm pretty sure what I had heard, this is later. Okay, I almost got my stories mixed up. Good on me. But yeah, he got fired in 1989, which sucks. But they toured Mexico, and Paul Masvidal played, he covered for them, and he's in Cynic, by the way. He covered for them, and during that, they found James Murphy, who was like session guitarist extraordinaire. He's awesome. And I think he has cancer, which sucks, but I'm praying for you, dude. Just quick little insert there. James Murphy is awesome. And I really hope he gets better. So, you know, if you ever listen to this James Murphy, I hope you get better. And best wishes, bro. But yeah, he brought in James Murphy and kept the other two guys from Massacre, Bill Andrews and what was the other guy? Terry Butler. Yeah. He kept those two. And with James Murphy, they recorded Spiritual Healing. And honestly, I really dug it. It was starting to show what they will become in the next few albums. Like, the interplay between Murphy and Shoulder was great. Like, guitar-wise, it was just awesome. Just the two of them going back and forth. It was really good because, you know, a lot of the really good guitarists, honestly, I feel like they need, like, you know, you've got some of them, like your Zakk Wylde, your Randy Rhoads, Dimebag Darrell. They don't need a second guitar. But oftentimes, I feel like a really good second guitarist is needed to make a guitarist even better. It's like, you know, like this podcast here. Like, you know, me talking is fine, but if somebody calls in at 323-657-0901 and I talk back with somebody, it'd be really awesome. Because, you know, sometimes you need two to tango. But yeah, this album here is really good. He got rid of the more gore themes that were in Leprosy and Scream Bloody Gore, and instead went to a more social critique, which was interesting. Like, you've got songs like Living Monstrosity, which is a song about crack babies, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it's about babies that are born to drug-addicted mothers. And, I mean, there's some really, really powerful stuff in here. That's one of them. Spiritual Healing, which just slight tangent. I can't really listen to that song without tearing up a little, because that was the song I was listening to in the van on the way to see my grandpa for the last time alive. Yeah, because he was really sick. And I don't know, every time I listen to that song, I just go back to being in that van. Just feeling like, you know, man, just so down. As well, as well you should be. But, you know, the song Spiritual Healing is amazing. And it talks about, like, TV preachers and stuff like that, and how they're just really false. A lot of them are false in using the name of God and spiritual stuff to line their own pockets, which is a very frustrating thing, if you ask me. But yeah, other songs, Defensive Personalities is my favorite from here, and that's what you'll be hearing here in a second, because it's just all the really good, all the great guitar work. I can't really remember what the lyrical theme behind that one was. But yeah, pretty much this album here really set the tone for the rest of Death's career. They really stopped talking as much about death and gore and disease and started more thinking about the world, which this is really the only album they do that as much, but you'll hear more introspective things from them coming soon. But yeah, this album also, musically, like I said, it was much more technical. As I said, with James Murphy coming in, there's a lot better interplay with it between the two of them. And I really enjoyed that. It added a lot more melody, which I guess I'll use that to go on a slight tangent with how I feel Death are as a band. I feel like they're always at the forefront of trends in death metal. Like, they started death metal, and then they started getting more progressive. They started to get more technical in their work. By this album, it was more technical death metal, which was starting to come into its own with bands like Cynic weren't going to come until a few years later. You'll be hearing from them in a second. But with bands like Atheist and bands like Atheist, they play more of like a jazzy side. There's more progression and technical ability in that, which is what I think Death did in this album. And then later, when you get the albums like Human and Individual Thought Patterns, it's even more progressive until all the way until The Sound of Perseverance, where it is progressive death metal for the most part. There is old death and that death are like two totally different monsters. But yeah, here, just to wrap up the talk about Spiritual Healing. Here's my favorite track off the album, Defensive Personalities.
World mind, divine disagree. For every problem, a personality. People are trying to grow that. For the right to put the flesh. With sorrow, some creature. With confusion.
I think that song really shows, like, when you, just like with Leprosy and Scream Bloody Gore, if you compare the two albums, it'll really show a progression. Like, from Scream Bloody Gore to Leprosy, they kind of slowed down more and let the song breathe and just played, I guess, got to play more. And between this album and the last album, it was just a lot. It was just a lot more technical, like I said, technical ability being showed, more songwriting ability shown. Just a really good album. This one was honestly great. I mean, they're all great. I will be saying that about every Death album. It's just so hard for me to really rank them. So like I said, at the end of this podcast, I'll go ahead and do that just to show, I guess, just my love for the band, that I can rank their albums. But yeah, Spiritual Healing, great album. And honestly, between that and what we got next with Human, what happened with the rest of the band was that Chuck and the guys were going to go do their own tour in Europe. But Chuck didn't want to go travel and didn't think it was very well organized, because apparently they did a tour in 88 that was unorganized. So, you know, I can understand the guy not going. But Bill Andrews and Terry Butler decided to fulfill those contractual obligations, which I can see as artists why they would want to do that. That is, I guess, a very amicable thing to do, to try to cover their asses. But they really pissed off Chuck, because they got two roadies to do guitar and vocals to replace Chuck. And Chuck Schuldner was a very angry and disgusted man. So pretty much he was going to sue their asses and booted them from the band. So there we go. It is Chuck stands alone. Chuck is the cheese. He stands alone. And from that, we come into Human, where he decided to use only session musicians only, which was fine, because, as we'll see, that we get some amazing albums. So for this album here, I think we really get to see what will become really a progressive death metal band. And honestly, with the people he picked for this first album with this new sound, he couldn't have picked any better. He hired Steve DiGiorgio on bass, and if I may take a second to say that Steve DiGiorgio is my favorite bassist and the best bassist of all time, I will say that, because the man plays a frontless bass in his sleep. I am sure he's very good at it. He's so skilled. And the dude, well, you can't really hear his bass on the Human album until it was remastered, because the mastering was a bit off. But once you hear it on stuff like Human and Control Denied's Art of Human Existence, yeah, that's what the album's called today. When you hear him on that, like, you just get to hear how great he is. And it was really good that they brought him in, because the dude can keep, not only can he keep a beat, he can do his own, like, guitar work, straight up lead guitar style. Just yeah, he got Steve DiGiorgio, which was a great move. And then he got Sean Reinhart and Paul Masvidal from Cynic, who are another band who are really amazing. Their album in 1993, Focus, is one that blew my mind when I first heard it, because I was reading Dan Haggerty's Mosh Pit columns on the Call him on 411mania.com. That's right. That dude is the reason why I'm doing this podcast, why I write my column. Pretty much he is the whole reason I am the metalhead I am today. Now, that album was awesome. That Cynic album, it was a really good, like, jazz fusion sort of thing, like you'll find with Atheist. But it was the only one that they did in the 90s. They didn't make another album until 2008. And by then, it was much more progressive and less death. Not much death at all. But yeah, Cynic were awesome. So we get awesome and awesome. And then you've got Chuck, who's awesome. And put that all together and mix it up, and you get awesome. Right. That's what happened. They released Human in 1991, and as a lot of people say, it is the start of the new death. It was much more progressive and technical than all their other stuff, and it really shows in the way the songs were structured, and you know, and just what is really being featured in the album. It's a really good album in my opinion, by the way. It's just so great. Like the opening, Flattening of Emotions. The opening is just awesome. It starts out with just like this pounding drum intro, and then it really is a noticeable difference between albums, especially in production. You can hear it, but it comes in much more. It comes and starts chugging, but then there'll be like changes and tempo every which way. It's just a really, really solid album. I really enjoyed it. And apparently Human was the highest selling death album to the time, which of course, because apparently it got MTV play. And we all know MTV play can be a very good thing. Not that we know now, because they don't play music. But yeah, their song was Lack of Comprehension. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah, that is the song I will be playing for you as well, because it's a really great song. And you got other great songs. I'm pretty sure Suicide Machine was on this album, which is great. The instrumental Cosmic Sea, had a very cosmic sound to it. As you know, it sounded like a Cosmic Sea. It was just such a great album. And yeah, there we go. Yeah. Sorry, that was just a little awkward thing there. I was trying to think. Yeah, Lack of Comprehension, that came back. That came out. Chuck Schuldiner rehired Eric Grief, who still runs the Facebook page and is still the lawyer for death, which is awesome. I don't know. I don't know what happened between the two of them, between Spiritual Healing and Human. But yeah, those two had some stupid shit and some squabbles and whatnot. But yeah. So with that really awkward 2 minutes of me trying to figure out what I was saying, here is the song that really shows just how different this death is from the death that we last had. Here is the song from Human that I'll be playing, Lack of Comprehension. So there you go. That I practically played half the damn song there, but I feel like it. I feel like it did a great job of showing you just how different the two really were. Because with Human, everything was much more interlaced rather than people, the bassist and the drummer doing kind of like their own thing of keeping the beat. And you had the guitarist kind of going back and forth. But here you had, you know, a nice mellow intro featuring the bassist just kind of doing his thing, with the drummer kind of just hitting around. And then you had a nice intro by Chuck. But the thing is, like, they did their own thing, but they really integrated it and just laced it together so well. And I think it does a real proof of just how great they did, how great these albums were. And I love it. It's good stuff. So, yeah. So from Human, we get Individual Thought Patterns, which, honestly, in my opinion, is the greatest lineup in any album ever. Super group or not, best lineup ever. Because Steve DiGiorgio, he left to go back to Sadus for a while, but he came back for Individual Thought Pattern. They brought him back, luckily enough. Love that. So great. So yeah, they brought him back, and for the rest of the band, they got the awesome Anvil Rock, King Diamond. He was cool. I love him. And then one of my favorite drummers, if not my favorite drummer, at least in terms of technical skill, ability, and as well as everywhere he's been, Gene fucking Hoagland from Dark Angel. He is one of my favorite drummers of all time, and he just fucking kills it on this album and the next album. He does amazing. And Andy LaRock was also on this album, but sadly, after the album, he left, and they brought in Kyle Santola, who is also another session guitarist extraordinaire. At the time, nobody had heard of him. But yeah, he showed up in the video for The Philosopher, which will be the song I will be playing. But yeah, this album had the greatest, more or less the greatest lineup, in my opinion, because you have Chuck Schuldiner, who is my favorite guitarist and singer of all time. At least metal vocalist. I won't say singer. Just that's like Dio. Dio is probably my favorite vocalist of all time. Or maybe Bruce Dickinson. It's really a good... Ooh. That's a debate from the other day, though. Anyways. And then you have Gene Hoagland, who is arguably one of my favorite drummers, if not my favorite. And then you have Steve DiGiorgio, who is my favorite bassist of all time. And you have Andy LaRock, who could pretty much play a pineapple and make great sounds out of it. So there. Yeah, they really just continue what Human started. Like with Human, what happened with Human was that they started their own kind of more of a progressive sound. And with this, they continued and they upped the production quality, which was much needed, because you could barely hear Steve DiGiorgio on the original master. I used a remastered version of Lack of Comprehension, so you can understand it better. But yeah, this album here didn't much more of what Human did. I'm not quite sure if I would say it is not as good an album as Human, because it's hard to rank. Like, honestly, it's not as good as the next album, but you'll find out why when I get there. But it wasn't as good as Human. I'm not going to say because of anything with the musicians involved. I just feel like Human was maybe had a bit more of a progressive feel to it, probably because of who he brought in. Like with this album, he brought in a drummer from a thrash band, Steve DiGiorgio, and then, you know, the man in Andy Rock, because they're not cynic in terms of progressive quality. But this album here was still very good. I really, really enjoyed it. It's got some great songs, like Jealousy is a great one. It has a really nice intro. Destiny is another one. I think Trapped in the Corners on this, which became a mainstay of their live show. And I'm trying to think if there are any other great songs. I mean, the whole album is full of great songs. It didn't grab me as much as it, but with that being said, it was still a really good album. And this one, it is required listening, of course. Like, every album on this is required listening, but definitely to show between Human, like, Human was New Death, and then Symbolic is, like, the height of New Death. This is, like, a nice ladder in the rung of how they got there. But yes, I'm trying to think. No, nothing really important in the band happened until we get to Symbolic. So here we go. Here is the song from Individual Thought Patterns I'll be playing for you. Here is The Philosopher. I think that really is a great representation of this album. It was, honestly, when I think about it, it stuck much more to a typical song structure. It was much more verse chorus and less Human was, which was still very verse chorus. Like, it still had a simple song structure, but it still had much more, a few more progressive players. This album here is amazing. The song The Philosopher was great. Oh, especially if you want to go on YouTube after this, go look at the Beavis and Butthead watching the Philosopher video where they keep thinking that the kid in the video was Jeremy and use Chuck screaming to talk about going to the drive-thru and ordering tacos. Yes, ordering tacos and from a drive-thru. So, yeah, that was that Individual Thought Patterns. It was just a great album, great lineup, and it was it's been released on Relapse recently. Like, I'm pretty sure they've done every album by Death and Control Denied up to they're up to Leprosy. So there we go. So yeah, from Individual Thought Patterns, we get to my favorite Death album, bar none, Symbolic, which I think is honestly a lot of people's favorite. Which was a lot of people's favorites, because it's where a lot of their some of their more popular songs come from. But we're keeping Gene Hoagland. Thank the Lord, because nothing says great music like Gene Hoagland. And Steve DiGiorgio and Ralph Santola left for their respective bands, or if you're Ralph Santola being a session member of something, and Steve DiGiorgio went back to Sadus, which, tangent here, Sadus is an awesome thrash band. Go check them out. But he brought in Kelly Conlon and Bobby Coble, who, honestly, I have not heard really anything from the two of them besides Death. I hate to say that, but what they did in Death was awesome. So, yeah, Symbolic is... I don't know if anybody listening here has ever had that one album where they feel like every track feels like it could be a greatest hit. It could be their best song. Every track on this album can be their best song, in my opinion. Bar none, hands down, every track on here is just awesome. It doesn't matter if it's the first song, the last song, or middle song. Everything seems to have a point, and there's no filler. Everything is just so, so great. I love this album so much. Like, honestly, it would rank very high up on my albums that I love list, of course. But yeah, it was a change. Honestly, it was supposed to be the last Death album. It really was. I think Chuck had felt like Death went as far as it could. But this was much more technical and progressive than even Individual Thought Patterns, because the growls have been, they're more of a scream, and they'll get even closer to that on Sound of Perseverance. But the tempo just got much slower. Like, most of the songs are not that frivolous pace. Most of them are kind of slower, and Chuck has done more of a scream than a growl, which is fine. I enjoy anything he does. But yeah, I mean, pretty much just go into the track list. Your Symbolic is a great opening, one of my favorite openers of all time, to be honest. Zero Tolerance. This is just a really good one. Empty Words. That honestly has been a, I think it's in the chorus. Like one of the quotes, one of the sentences from the chorus, which is, the answers cannot be found in the ways of others or the words of a trained mind. It's something that, as a teaching major, is something that I've really used as a mantra of mine for years. Like, yes, I would be that trained mind, but what the song is telling you is to go out and find your own answers. You can't find the answers in somebody else's words or actions. Sometimes you need to just go find it yourself and just discover it, which is something that isn't really taught in a lot of schools, at least not in my school. Then again, North Carolina is my favorite backward state in the United States. So there we go. But it's a really good song with a great intro, and I feel like it had such a good message. You had songs like Sacred Serenity, which another great intro, and Thousand Eyes, which is very ironic when you consider the whole NSA thing with everybody spying on you. 1,000 Eyes is a song about, you know, the government watching you, and it's a song about being in the people, under the people. It's a pretty great song, Without Judgment. So, yeah. Great. A Crystal Mountain is a song. I'm not quite sure. I think it's a song again. I know the Crystal Mountain, they're the crystals are real, but I'm not sure. But it's a great song. Throw is awesome. I'm relating to the track. Perennial Quest is one of my favorite. Honestly, I'm just remiss that I had forgotten to put this in my top five for closing tracks. Perennial Quest has one of my favorite outros of all time. It's just so, so damn wonderful. And it's just a song about a first journey. It's really good. It tells a great story. And like I said, it is the cherry on the amazing souffle of fuck. What is a good souffle? I was almost like macaroni and cheese souffle. Somebody probably going to vomit at that thought. Cherry on top of the strawberry souffle as well. It's such a great song on top of all these great songs. And every song here is just amazing. The album cover is one of my favorites of all time, bar none. So here we go. Just closing up before I ramble about Symbolic. Here is Crystal Mountain. That was definitely a song against the, I'm going to say it's the Catholic Church, a song about the Crystal Cathedral and, like, you know, on your seventh day, is that what it's always done? It's talking about, it's really talking about living on blind faith, and stuff like that. It's just, it's a really great song, and it's further proofs just even more progressive, how much more progressive and technical they got on this album, rather than the more typical, you know, kind of a typical song structure. Here it was, you have your chorus, but sometimes it doesn't always come right after the first. There can be a musical interlude or whatever. That song there is honestly one of my favorites by theirs. And it's my favorite for me and my buddy Nick to make jokes off of, like Inside Crystal Mountain, Chucky Watches Porn, you know, something immature like that. But it's such a good album. And honestly, right here is where I should have stopped the podcast. Like, if Chuck Schuldiner would have gotten his way, I'd have been done right here. But no. Because Chuck Schuldiner signed pretty much the back half of the band to Roadrunner. And he was with Roadrunner for this album, but then he signed everything to Nuclear Blast. Sorry, got that a little mixed up. Because, yeah, this album was actually a Roadrunner for a very long time, and they've already released the special edition, but Relapse is getting the rights to release a special edition of their own, which I am just salivating over. But Chuck pretty much moved on from Death and went to Control Denied. But Nuclear Blast wanted another Death album. He wanted a new one to advertise what Death really was. I guess it's like, hey, here's the rest of the album. Well, first, go buy this new one. I know. I guess to get the people paying attention to Death and, you know, just seeing what they're all about. So Chuck went and got Richard Christie, who is my favorite drummer of all time, as well. He's a great drummer. He did some work with Iced Earth and Charred Walls of the Damned is the band he's been working with now. But he's also known as the guy from the Howard Stern Show. So if you're wondering why he's in the tags, it's just in case anybody's looking for Howard Stern. But did some work with Howard Stern. Shannon Hamm is a great guitarist. He really is. And Scott Clendenin was on bass. Sorry. Okay. Got that right. And they released the album, The Sound of Perseverance. And before we start that, I have to play the song here, off of Sound of Perseverance, Spirit Crusher, because it has been my ringtone since I got my cell phone, my only cell phone that I've owned so far. It's been the ringtone for my cell phone for almost 4 years, so I'm just going to give you a little taste of Spirit Crusher. I just had to play that, and like every time that chorus hits, I look at my phone because that part is my ringtone. Yeah. Well, I think this right here really, wow, like you can tell the immediate difference, because pretty much I'm sure some of these songs were Control Denied songs. And you can tell, because I'll get Control Denied here in like a few minutes. But this song is just worlds different than what we got on Symbolic. It's much, much slower, and it's got many more. It is just nuts in terms of, you know, here's your verse, what the fuck just happened? Here's your chorus. Just, there's a lot more things involved. It's much, much more progressive, which comes from really influenced from what Controlled Denied is going to be. And honestly, I'll just get to Controlled Denied in a second. But this album really, it just shows how far he's come. Like this album here is progressive death metal, full and all in all. It is not, death metal with some progression. No, this is progressive death metal. And it really shows in a lot of these songs. Like, for most of these songs here are incredibly long, at least in terms of death length, because, you know, Death Before, their longest song was Perennial, besides Perennial Quest, was usually around 5 minutes usually. They would go from about 3 to 5 minutes usually. But here, the average song length was usually around 6.5, and you had some stuff like Bite the Pain and Voice of the Soul, which I wish I'd have uploaded now, because Voice of the Soul is just amazing. It is the one song I will send, by death, that I will send to all non-metalheads, because it's just a very kind of melancholic, just beautiful instrumental. It is so wonderful. And they actually covered it at the Death to All concerts, which was what Death to All it was all the musicians of death, besides Chuck, because, spoiler, Chuck died. It makes me so sad. I'll get to that in a little while. But, yeah, he died, so... Is Death to All was all the like a good 11 or so musicians from Death, because Death has had so many people in the band going and playing stuff in the name of Chuck's legacy, which I adore. Some people didn't like it, but I, for the most part, I love it, and I wish I'd have went, but they only had like 4 concert dates, and they added 2, but the Atlanta and Texas dates apparently weren't selling enough, so they cancel them, which makes me mad, because I totally would have went to Atlanta. I would have sold one of my cats to go to Atlanta. No joke. Okay, some joke, because I'd never sell my cat. But regardless, yeah, for the most part, these songs here were definitely, they were a lot longer. Scavenger of Human Sorrow, which will, I'm pretty sure, yeah, that's the song I'm playing for this album. It's just really fast and just a great intro, and then it just had like a really fast guitar part that come after the fast drum section. Like, everything, there's a lot of different things. Like, Bite the Pain was more of a traditional song. The Spirit Crusher was really slow and more progressive. Flesh and the Power It Holds is probably their most progressive song on here. I love that song. It is one of the first songs. Actually, to go back a little, I think, honestly, Spirit Crusher was the first. Yeah, Spirit Crusher was the first death song I'd heard, not Crystal Mountain. Crystal Mountain was second. Because I remember hearing Spirit Crusher, being blown away, looking up Death on Wikipedia, and looking how all their albums had 4.5 stars from AllMusic, which at the time was like, oh, AllMusic, it must be good. So like, all their albums had really high grades, and then I did listen to, downloaded a few songs, and listened to them at like church and shit, and it was just amazing. So good. So good stuff. But yeah, all these songs here are just great. And then at the end of the album was their cover of Painkiller, which had Chuck really showing off how he could actually hit some really high notes. And speaking of high notes, this album here, he has almost black metal vocals on here. There is very little of like all the old death metal vocals around. No, not really. It is almost purely just, it is really high and loud and kind of shrill, and I adore it, because honestly, I think it was much more comfortable for him, because, yeah, I've read that it was more comfortable for him to do it, because, you know, sometimes as you get older, it is harder to emulate what you could do when you were younger. Just ask Mike Tyson. I had to get Mike Tyson jab. Ha, that's a jab. I had to get that in there, but apparently Spirit Crusher was the single. And honestly, I think it's one of their most popular songs, because their video for it has like 1.5 million views on YouTube, which is retarded for death metal. Not many albums have 1.5 million views. Ooh, I said retarded. Sorry if I offended anybody, but it is what it is. So yeah, this album pretty much, this is the epilogue to, or this is what, actually Controlled Denied will be the epilogue, but this is their final album. This really is showing you how their journey turned out. Like, you know, we went from standard death metal and slowly delved into progressive to, this is pure progressive death metal. And that is cool. And it's just, it's a journey. Almost like if they made a book out of this. They made a column. Actually, I wrote a column about this that I was going to use as notes, but I couldn't find it. Thanks, internet. Jackass. But yeah, like this band was like an adventure. Going, just showing a man's, like, I guess a man's musical quest over about 12 years of his life. Really 15 if you consider the demos and stuff. His how he goes from death metal and slowly progresses into a much more progressive side. And as we'll hear with the little epilogue here with Control Denied, he ends up with progressive metal. But before we get to that, here is the song that I chose off of the Sound of Perseverance to be played in this podcast here, Scavenger of Human Sorrow. Because after this, really, the blanket is being pulled off, and Chuck went straight prog metal, which is fine, and I respect him for doing this. And the reason why I'm including this album in a death retrospective is because I think, as really many fans of Chuck Schuldiner's work will tell you, that Control Denied really is a death album with a different name. And he gave it a different name because I think in his own words, he even said that that if he had released this under the death umbrella, it wouldn't have been right. This is not death, but this is really just an extension of what they had become. Like I think he was tired of doing the death metal vocals and stuff, as like I'm assuming the backer vocals on this. He wanted to do something with more traditional vocals, which I can fully respect that, because honestly, this album stacks up with everything else they've done, in my opinion. I wouldn't say my opinion, because I like Symbolic more, but the Fragile Art of Existence by Control Denied, honestly, can be considered their best work, especially one of the best albums of all time, in my opinion. But, you know, I'm a bit biased, because the man is quite literally my hero, as I said, the end of almost every one of my columns, Keep the Metal Phase Alive. That is the last thing he ever said on live, live in L.A., live album. At the end of Pull the Plug, he says, Keep the Metal Faith Alive, which is, you know, I've just taken that to heart. But for Control Denied, he kept Richard Christie and Shannon Hamm and got rid of Scott Condon and brought back in Steve DiGiorgio, which really benefits this album because he gets to really show off his bass work, and it really helps progressive elements of this. And originally, he had done vocals for the band, but I think it was a smarter move to get a power metal vocalist. He got Tim Amar from the band, he was a Pharaoh. And he was great. And while sometimes Tim's stuff can get a little overwhelming, for the most part, he did great. And I think it was a much better choice to, I guess, with somebody you would feel more comfortable with, because Chuck's vocals are actually pretty good, especially considering I never knew he could sing. thing. But Tim was a much better choice for what they picked. I included this Controlled Night album because it's the only one. Because sadly Chuck passed away. As we end this, but it's more of like the epilogue to their career. Like, you know, you had all these albums, and this is just like the, I guess this is just the sum of the parts. Like, this is pretty much Chuck's just last, I guess his last stand in terms of metal. He was like, okay, here's progressive death metal, getting tired of death metal, so started progressive metal, which was fine by me. I love that. But he went with a progressive album, and it was amazing. It really is like what the Fragile Artist exists. The Fragile Artist is the sound of progressive bands with clean vocals and more progressive stuff like Fragile Artist Existence and Consumed and What If are much more progressive in style than stuff like even Spirit Crusher. There's still a lot of progressive elements to it. But I just love the album. And to be honest, they're supposed to, I really want to hear the new Control Denied album because they're supposed to be getting together, all the other guys from the band are supposed to be getting together and finishing it because it is titled Man Machine Collide. And Chuck's was done. Like, he finished everything else. He had finished all of his work, and Rick Christie finished the drum work. But everything else was not finished. So yeah, I'm not sure when Man and Machine Collide come out, but when it does, I will definitely like beg and plead Mark to view it on here. But yeah, so here is pretty much the swan song of Chuck Schuldiner's musical career. Here is the song Consumed off of Controlled Night's album, The Fragile Art of Existence. Too long, my apologies, but I thought just felt like really need to see or maybe just hear how different this album was in comparison. I guess not really different, but just was different in comparison to the stuff from Sound of Perseverance. which was this like prog metal with a death metal coating. Yeah, this album just amazing. Go look if you're a fan of progressive metal, pick it up. If you're a fan of power metal, pick it up. If you're pretty much if you are a metalhead, pick this album up because it is more than accessible enough to people who don't like death metal because it doesn't have death metal vocals really. But yeah, it's a really good album. I'm really sad that it was the last one because I'm sure everybody listening, if you didn't, well, Chad Oldner died in 2000 of brain cancer. It was very rare brain cancer. Very sad. He was working on the second Controlled Denied album, but it was starting to get to him. And apparently his condition had improved. And they let him out of the hospital. Yeah. No, sorry. No, I was just rereading over that. Stuff, but yeah, he was getting her apparently brain cancer, but he had a lot of cool bills. So if I'm not mistaken, Dave Grohl actually had a festival for Chuck Schuldiner's help pay for his medical bills because yeah, the guy was a musician. He didn't have any money. At least he had money or medical insurance fees, in fact. So he decided to, get something to help him out. And it was just really great. And I actually had not known this until, I was reading about Plot one day. And it was talking about how he almost got Chuck Schuldiner, but Chuck was, too sick, and he died, and it was really sad. This still just bothers me, just, knowing that I never got to meet the guy. We all have that hero, the guy that we look up to so much. Chuck Schuldiner really is the guy for me. It's funny, because I'm not in a band. Like, it is my dream to just front a band in a concert one day. But really, I just wish I had gotten to meet the guy, and yeah, but it was really cool of Dave Grohl to do that for Chuck and family because I'm sure those medicals were not cheap. Cancer is not cheap, sad. It's terrible. Chuck got pneumonia and he was released from the hospital and he died an hour later. And that's just rough. I hate that. And everybody hates it when somebody dies from cancer. Nobody likes it. It sucks so much. Yeah, there is death. I'm really sorry if I rambled everybody to death. But it had to be done. I'm wishing I would have been a call-in or something. I'm pulling a Robert Winfrey. I am rolling solo. I'm hoping everybody likes this. I'm hoping to get some feedback. So yeah, death, like I said, you should go look them up. And yeah, before I figure out, ranking their albums. Okay, I'm keeping Controlled Denied of this because they are not the same band. So, number one would be Symbolic. I've already stated that. It's my favorite. Every song is great. And it's just a nice, it would have been a great endpoint for Death if that would have been the end. But it wasn't. So, that, and then Sound of Perseverance would be my number two. It's a very close number two as well. But it is so my number two. I really, really enjoy it. Found it great. Number three, because then you get, like, the other five albums are literally, I wake up and I don't know which one to put number three. I think I'll put Leprosy. No, not Leprosy. Scream Bloody Gore. Because it was the first, it pretty much started a genre more or less. It started the genre. It was a great album, and it was just a great genesis for the band. Number four would be Human. Human. I think Human would definitely go right there. Human was a great re-debut for the new Death. It was a good debut for the new Sound of Death. I loved it. It was just absolutely wonderful as an album. I just enjoyed it so damn much. Number five would probably be, I'm going to give it to Leprosy. Not Leprosy. I'm going to give it Spiritual Healing. because that one, like I said, his lyrical themes are so different from everybody else. It was showing the lyrical maturity of Chuck and Friends. And the band itself was just doing great. So that as a number six, I guess I would give it to... I'll give it to Individual Thought Patterns. Be like the best lineup in any album ever, period. Had so many great, had a lot of really great songs. It was a further continuation of the progressive death metal sound that they had started. And then you, Leprosy would be my number seven, but I don't like putting any of these albums at number seven. Can I just put them all at number three? Maybe. Do I get that? Okay. Well, they're all at number three because I'm making the rules, bitches. That's right. The Metal Coop is making the rules. So yeah, there's, I guess, just like I promised, I ranked my death metal album just like I promised. The band itself, look them up. If anybody is listening, like, you know, I don't think I have any fanboys. If you are a fan of mine, I'm sorry that you couldn't be a fan of somebody better. But, yeah, go look them up. They are, you will not be sorry. Go find any song by them and at least just try. See what you like, you know, maybe you won't like it, maybe you will, but I really think anybody should see what they want. They are just astounding. Every song is so wonderfully crafted and well done and so good. It is a very, they're such a great band. I adore them. But yeah, that is all for this podcast, at least in terms of content. Now it's time for, let me see if I can get my plugs in real quick. So in terms of plugs from me, Mr. Robert Cooper, you have the Hammer of Doom News Report every Sunday, which it might be moving to Monday nights because it's easier for me to do it then. But if it does, it'd be coming out around Monday night, Tuesday morning. Go check it out. This week's was a pretty solid column. I'm trying to think what the main story was. You know, the main story wasn't that impressive. It was Chuck Billy talking about how he looked at newer bands for his inspiration, which I was just lauding on how amazing that is. And, you know, how some bands really need to look at newer bands for inspiration because sometimes older bands aren't working. And by the way, just on a note, just looking at the timer here, if the live broadcast goes off and I'm still talking, don't worry. You can hear the last minute or so of my plugs and overtime, which will be afterwards. So, yeah, the Hammer of Doom News Report on 411mania.com's Music Zone. In about an hour and a half, you can find me on Stephen Randall's Spreaker. On his Spreaker page at spreaker.com/ I think TWE Penny After Dark, maybe. It's the Cooperative Multiplayer Podcast where we talk about video games. Yeah, it's really me rambling, and sometimes we talk about video games. Yeah, that's a thing. The Sentai Rider Podcast now on the Red Ocean Broadcasting Network is all your favorite tokusatsu reviewing and news. We talked about the last two episodes of Kamen Rider Wizard this week, which is more or less a crossover movie between Kamen Rider Decade and Kamen Rider Wizard. It's a fairly solid set of episodes, and it's actually a pretty fun episode to listen to. It's pretty short, only an hour, so just give it a listen if you wish. New to the Rattlish Broadcasting Network is the Three Beards. That is right. Just love us. Go listen to us. We're great. The band itself is just really, not the band, the podcast itself is pretty much any and everything that you would ever want to listen to. We talk about just personal stuff and funny news and, you know, stuff that interests us, comic books and TV shows and movies and music, you know, whatever. Just give us a listen. We're on the Radlich and Broadcasting Network now. Thank you, Mark Radlich. You are an amazing man. As well as we're on the 336cast.com, which is where the Sentai Rider podcast will also be, where we have stuff like that. The Name Redacted podcast, which is pretty solid. And a few other things like Opposing Thumbs, I think is with Fletcher and Jeff the Asshole, who are guys on Three Beards. They're going to be doing their own podcast. I think they talk movies. But you can also find Three Beards on iTunes. Rate us, review us 5 stars. I'll love you a long time. And you can find us at facebook.com/ the Three Beards Podcast. And I think that is all the plugs for me. Now, in terms of the Rattlers and Broadcasting Network, I think the Long Road to Ruin will be back next Tuesday with Robert Winfrey at the helm and Sean Comer as co-host, where they talk about part two, the shitty movies of the Hellraiser series. I love those two guys. They are great podcasters and very intelligent men. So go check that out. And just hear, I'm sure Sean's going to take just a giant shit on Pinhead. So go listen to that. It's going to be pretty great. The Rattlesham Broadcasting Network has many great podcasts at its helm, syndicated and hosted. The 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show was on Sunday, where they previewed the Junior Dos Santos versus Cain Velasquez 3 that's coming up this Saturday, as well as reviewed Damian Maia versus Jake Shields, the Fight Night broadcast from last Wednesday on Fox Sports 1. There are also some of the podcasts by the Rated R Republican John Brodigan are up, stuff like The Right Hook, which Mark does with him, and they just talk about silly things and make chicken noises and occasionally politics and whatnot. And there's another podcast that he does that I can't quite remember. I apologize that I can't remember it, but that's there. Robert Winfrey's Everyone Loves a Bad Guy is doing its own horror month on villains. I know they've done slashers and hauntings. I'm not quite sure what they have next week. I haven't listened to it, but it's really solid fare, I can tell you, because Robert is he's a very cool guy. He's very intelligent and can podcast his ass off. So I'm pretty sure that is it for me. Just go to FullOnOneMania.com for all your wrestling news and columns, as well as movies, TV, music, MMA, and video games. It's a really great website. I love it. I've been a fan for years. I'm blessed to have written for the place. So I'm Robert Cooper, and I really hope you like this podcast. Please send me feedback. I'm begging for some. You know, just tell me what I need to work on, or if you like this or whatever. Find it at themetalcoop@gmail.com is where my email is. You can tweet me at themetalcoop, which is TADMETACOOP. That is Metal Coop. And if you want to find me on Facebook, it's Coop, COOP, VIDE, INFRA. The one and only time I'm giving out my Facebook, because it's so low, I really want some responses. So I thank you all for listening, and I want you all to have a very good day and to go listen to Death. Please listen to Death. Yeah. So in the words of my great co-host on here, be well, be safe, and behave. But in the words of me, keep the metal faith alive. Thank you, and let's see if I can find the ending theme here. All right? Let's see. The end. Does this work? No. That is not the end. Okay. Is it clutch? Let's see. See ya. All right. I think this is the right one. No. Damn it, Mark. Which one is your ending? Fuck it. Can't tell which one his ending is. Plus, it's live, bitches. No, that's good night. That's good night to the bad guy. Damn, Mark. I give up. So you know what? You know what we're going to go out to? We're going to go out to fucking pull the plug. So that's right. Keep the metal faith alive.